Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Seeking Alpha, Alpha Talks Editors Roundtable. What moved the markets this week? The week ending Friday, April 23rd, 2021. A pretty eventful week. We had stocks selling off at the start of the week and then rebounding, and we're all set to go higher on Thursday after a very encouraging initial jobless claims report before a certain notice from the Biden administration hit the news about increased taxes, especially on capital gains. And that spooked the markets yesterday, Thursday, causing some selling. Now, today, as we record this around noon on Friday, stocks have once again rebounded, but are still not up for the week, still not quite recovered these losses. The Dow is down about 0.6%, S&P off about 0.3%, and NASDAQ down about 0.4%. Interestingly enough, the small caps, the Russell, are holding up. They are the only major index that is up to the tune of about 0.3%. Anyway, I'm very interested in what my colleagues have to say about all of this, and I will introduce them now in no particular order. Brad Olison, VP of News. Kim Kahn, Senior News Editor. Stephen Alther, Managing Editor of Breaking News. I am your host and moderator, Nathaniel E. Baker, Senior Editor of Strategic Contributors. Let's kick it over to Kim to start us off.
I think that, as you mentioned, yesterday's sell-off is kind of indicative about how the market's been feeling this week. There was a sharp downturn as soon as this Bloomberg headline hit the wires that Biden administration is looking to double the capital gains tax to more than 40%. And you know, they sold off and accelerated into the close that day. But I don't think the market is all concerned about the cap gains tax per se. It was just kind of an excuse. Otherwise, we wouldn't be back up today. And certainly, maybe the market would have sold off a couple of hours earlier when the exact same story was reported by the New York Times and there was no market reaction. So it's kind of like one of these, kind of parties where someone jumps in the pool to try and liven things up and then everybody jumps in the pool. It's, they seem like, okay, we're done. This is a good excuse to sell for today, because the market was drifting before that. And basically we've got a market that was really looking for maybe something special to push it further against above the all-time highs hit last week. I've also got a lot of Wall Street calls saying that now is it's feeling like a time for a correction in the S&P, and then to something of a shakeout of 10% to then go on to the next leg higher. I think people are cognizant of that, and that's kind of the thing. If you see this one bad headline, people are saying, oh, maybe this is it. Maybe this is kind of the trigger and we're going to sell off, because, it's going to take a little more than earnings, which have been good, or, economic data, which has also been good. That's kind of been priced in with, going up into the earnings season with these all-time highs. And, but also from the bullish camp, the shiny object trade of cryptos and NFTs and SPACs is kind of easing off. So maybe some of that money does find its way back into the mega cap stocks, which are still really the kind of key for taking these markets to new levels.
Yeah, you raise an interesting question, which is, which one of us, of the four of us, would be most likely to jump into the pool at a party first? And would we dive or would we do a cannonball? Viewers and listeners can respond with their vote. I'm not sure who I would vote for personally. Anyway, Brad, winners and losers this week?
Yeah, just to build on what Kim was mentioning about where we go from here, just in terms of the optimism in the market, a lot seems baked in. Earnings are one such catalyst to help give us some direction. But just to build a little bit on what Kim was mentioning, in Bank of America's Fund Manager Survey, they did mention that they're you know, investors are effectively all in right now. The AAI index, you have the highest bull bear ratio since 2018. We've had 23 all-time highs in 2021. LPL Financial says that that's the most at any point since 1998. And even the JP Morgan's head of equity strategy said that there's an elevated risk of a correction. But even then, he'd be buying dips. So to Kim's point, it seems like, you know, people were looking for a little bit of excuse here to sell when they could, but ultimately with everything kind of lining up in the positive, it, there's still a little bit of room to go. And at least as far as the earnings season is going, that seems to be the predominant driver of those winners and losers this week. Those you're talking Netflix and Intel were among the biggest losers in the S&P 500 following their earnings results. Netflix missed a little bit on their subscriber expectations, and Intel is struggling with its growth and revenue trajectory. And Bank of America even came out with a note following the results, just citing the fact that there are multiple negative factors for why they're a little bit cautious on Intel's trajectory. Basically, the fact that they didn't have any sales growth in a year when everyone was buying tech, right? Everyone was buying equipment to set up work from home situations, and companies were expending a lot on technology. And so they thought that was kind of concerning. And interestingly, the other weaker names on that list included some of the airlines, which counterintuitively is weird considering some airlines are actually bringing back pilots en masse from furlough. So we had those announcements contrasted with United Airlines cutting their forecasts on expectations, despite American Airlines' earnings optimism and beat. Other winners, I guess, were also earnings related. You had Intuitive Surgical, Edward Life Sciences, and Equifax were all major beats on the earnings line, and some railroads were stronger on M&A. So, you know, obviously heavily earnings driven week. You can't really make heads or tails of major trends this week other than just looking at some of these specific names and where they're pointing to optimism and caution.
Yeah. All right. On the earnings front, corporate news, Stephen, what were you watching there?
Netflix earnings, pretty interesting. I think that they had guided to 6 million new subscribers. They only got 4 million. That's a pretty sizable miss. And the company only guided Q2 at a subscriptions of about 1 million. So that kind of, I don't know if they're turning into Cisco or something like that. But, you know, they also announced a major buyback. So, you know, is that company's, you know, the pandemic's, you know, maybe in the rearview mirror a bit, and they've really got serious competition on a number of fronts. So maybe that company is, you know, finally moved out of its hyper growth phase and into kind of a mature phase where they're going to have to, you know, kind of pay a fortune for more content. And they have a lot of strong competitors. I'm not saying the company's, just going to disappear or go into a bear market or anything like that. But certainly, you know, that space is maturing quite a bit. So I found that really interesting. I also found earnings from Procter & Gamble and Kimberly-Clark this week, super interesting. They're getting squeezed on prices, and as a result, they're raising prices. You juxtapose that with Coca-Cola late last week saying they're raising prices. So, you know, the Fed says that we'll move that into the macro. The Fed says that's transitory, this kind of inflation spike that we're seeing right now. We'll see who's right. April's been a really weird month, right? Markets are kind of on fire, hitting a lot of new record highs. We've had tons of strong economic prints, one after the other. We've had a high inflation print as well, one of the highest in many years. But bond yields are actually down this month. They're actually down rather significantly, 20, 25 basis points on the 10-year. So something's not adding up. We'll see how that plays out.
All right, let's move on to the second segment of the show where we discuss our favorite articles, news items, Seeking Alpha coverage, or other things that we may have worked on or perhaps been involved with, or perhaps not. And why don't we start with Kim?
I'm going to look at the short, unhappy life of the European Super League. This is a venture by 12 of Europe's biggest soccer teams to kind of break away from the Champions League tournament, form their own league. And it's almost like kind of private equity move where they were going to, you know, slash costs and maximize revenue for their group, kind of a more US league system where it's, closed shop, no promotion relegation. There's, you know, collective bargaining agreements and greater revenue share. And it just failed spectacularly in 48 hours. Kind of almost a new Coke level of misfire. They just really failed to read the room as far as the fans are concerned. There were protests and, you know, backlash from the players, and then the governing bodies of soccer got involved and threatening sanctions against the players if they participated in the league. And even politically, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson was looking at ways like to have a massive windfall tax on teams that played. So it just collapsed. And I think really odd timing when they decided to announce it too. It was kind of the middle of the pandemic when fans, and certainly in England, can't go to games still. That's a lot of protests have failed because fans have said, oh, we still want to watch the match, but they didn't have that option. And, you know, lockdown had ended in England. So yeah, a real big misfire there.
Yeah, you have to ask what they were thinking. Well, not so much what they were thinking, but how they weren't better prepared for the backlash. And, you know, after to fold after just 48 hours, I mean, some of these things must have been anticipated. I mean, they must have known that this would upset fans, that the governing bodies, the UEFA and FIFA, would take major issue with it and come in and threaten to suspend their players and relegate, get teams relegated from their top flight domestic leagues and things like that. So that was all very surprising to me. My favorite part of this story is UEFA and FIFA now coming down as the protector of fans and protector of the little guy and opposed to greed. Right. That's the best part of this whole story for me, how they emerge as the good guys. I mean, these guys, anyway.
Let's not forget the investment angle, right? There's Manchester United stock was one of the more volatile names associated with this story. I mean, it is, I love the read the room thing. I think is perfect. I think golf experienced its own attempt at this, and I think they're actually trying to restart it with their own side, I guess, superstar bonus pool. I can't imagine that's going to go over well with any of the fans either. Just definitely might be a little tone deaf.
Yeah,
it was so bad that JP Morgan actually apologized for providing the financing for the startup.
Didn't the shares of some of the publicly traded soccer teams rise on Monday after the initial report came out?
Oh yeah. Man United and Juventus popped sharply and then came right back down to earth. But
well, right.
Actually, I think United's up today again now because another group is challenging the Glazers who own the team, also own the Buccaneers, and they're saying like to cut their stake. So we'll see. I mean, some of these owners that were in the Super League may not survive.
Yeah. Although you would expect at some point there to be some kind of permanent Champions League type of thing, whether it's run by UEFA or by somebody else. Anyway, that's for all us soccer fans, of course, a very big story. But also, as Brad mentioned, from the investment standpoint as well, just, I guess, one of those things where you just really do have to anticipate everything that could possibly go wrong. And when you have multiple entities involved from multiple countries, multiple owners, it's just increases the possibility that something could go wrong, I guess. All right. Anyway, Brad, what about you? Your favorite story?
So the soccer story was all fun and it's kind of lighthearted and fun. I'm going to have to go a little more solemn on today's episode. Just the story in India, I think, is kind of overwhelming. It kind of flew under the radar a little bit for the past few weeks. And maybe that's to blame some of the Western media for not necessarily closely following it as much as we should. But cases. COVID cases, you know, you have a massive undercounting issue there. I think that's widely understood in terms of deaths and actual cases. It's getting to a point where they said, I think some of the testing percentages came back at 1 in 3 people, which when you're at that kind of level of positivity, that means that many, many more than 1 in 3 people are actually infected because you just can't test at that kind of rate to get any sort of efficiency. So highly concerning. I think we tend to focus on some of the Western stocks that are looking forward, like the airlines, you know, bringing back pilots, all sorts of optimism about future travel. But worldwide COVID cases are, I believe now with India's contribution, I think at like their highest level. So during this whole pandemic, so everyone's looking forward from an investment perspective, but do have to keep an eye on what's going on in India. What's leading, some of the experts are pointing to what they're calling a double mutant as responsible for some of this rise in India cases. And with the undercounting of deaths estimated at almost 10x, you can extrapolate out that to something like 20,000 a day, which is just historic, concerning, and, you know, our our thoughts go out to our partners there, and you know, it's just something to keep an eye on for the future. You know, as this continues to spiral, we get more and more variations. There's the Brazil variant, there's the UK variant with J&J, I think has some sort of effectiveness towards, I think a South African variant. Just something to keep an eye on. The longer this sticks around, the more times it mutates. These drug makers are going to have to respond even faster, and these countries are going to have to come up with more effective ways to contain this, or at least put it to bed once and for all, as opposed to, you know, a mishmash of policies across borders.
Yeah, and Pfizer also came out and said that there would likely need to be a third shot for their vaccine to protect against future strains, but definitely very concerning what's coming out of India, and we hope everyone there can stay healthy. Stephen, what about you?
Our capital gains tax coverage. It's one of those dark moments in media that we have to treat this kind of nonsense seriously. I can say this, having sold some assets at one point in my life and not really caring about the capital gains tax, but only idiots pay capital gains taxes. Yeah. They can double it, triple it. It's a jobs bill for wealth planners. It's a jobs bill for tax lawyers. Whether it's real estate, stocks, whether retirement accounts, 1031 exchanges, it's a blip. And to anyone who sold stocks because they're floating a possible capital gains tax rate hike, that's ridiculous. I think the last time they were hiked was probably 2013, and you know, we've had a bull market ever since. So.
Not to mention, I think the actual time the capital gains tax did go up, there were double-digit gains for the foreseeable, like, I think, a couple of years afterwards. And even this one is only going to be impacting those with, I think, an estimate was less than 0.5% of individuals would be impacted by this doubling of the rate. So the number on the face sounds really worrying, but how much of an impact?
Right, and they've got lures at the yin yang, and it's not going to affect them either.
So. And you can sell it before it goes into effect, or you know, unless they backward date this and somehow have a way to track it. You know, like Steve says, people are just going to be escaping through the side doors and escape hatches all day long.
Yeah.
I get a kick out of it on both ends, right? Every time taxes are cut, we're taking whatever money out of school lunches, and every time taxes are hiked, we're going to drive people to move to, I don't know, you know, some New Zealand or something like that. It just doesn't work that way. It's not that simple, and it really shouldn't have any too much effect on whether you buy or sell stock.
And the other thing is, I mean, this could also get watered down considerably.
And they're not going to double it anyway. You know, it's going to be somewhere in between what it is now.
It's going to be watered down.
Just do your best not to make $1 million, and you'll be fine.
Right. Yeah. Which is harder for journalists, of course, because. All right. And for me, my favorite story was, none of you guys have talked about it, so I'm going to, crypto sell-off. Crypto, Bitcoin is down what? I got to look here. It was almost 10% Bitcoin was down this week, which is really surprising considering it's such a stable hold of value and the kind of thing that's going to compete with major currencies one day. But to lose 10% in a week, can you imagine if the US dollar did that?
And that is down 25% from an all-time high less than a week ago, or about a week ago. So
yeah,
actually much, much bigger move than you even described.
Yeah, exactly. So not exactly the type of thing you would want to put your savings into, although apparently people have. Good luck to them. So yeah, but that's it for me. But you know, it isn't all bad. I mean, Coinbase I saw was selling off along with this, but then today they rebounded. So people going in there and doing a little bargain shopping, perhaps, so they think. So, you know, the crypto story is not over. This is just one small chapter, as we'll see. Okay, well, that completes this week's edition of the Alpha Talks Seeking Alpha Editors Roundtable. If you listened to the audio version just now and would like to see the video that we put up, that airs earlier than the audio podcast, specifically by 4 p.m. on Friday afternoon, right in time for the market close. And with that, we thank you all for watching and listening, as the case may be, and look forward to speaking to you again next week.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.